Hey yo, and here we go. It is episode 70 of We Talk Comics. This is the Comicosity crossover event. We are down a couple of regular co-hosts this week. Chris is off on assignment, and Mo, of course, is at the Council of Cardinals because he is one of the people who chooses the new pope. But Brett is here with us this week.
That's right. You can pretty much bet that it's not going to be me who's choosing the new pope.
Well, thank you for being one of the ones that turned up, Brett.
Yeah, no problem. I thought it'd be fun.
And this is the Comicosity crossover event. So we have brought a very special co-host this week. This is a new type of crossover. This is the DC type of crossover where you don't have to read every part. They all make sense on their own. But if you want to see them all, then it's great. We've got Jessica Boyd. Jessica, say hi.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Jessica, I think you're only the third woman we've had on the show. Fourth, maybe. Adrian Barbeau. Yep. Fiona Staples.
Pia Guerra.
And Pia Guerra. Okay, so that's three.
Yep. You had Grace Randolph.
Grace Randolph. That's some pretty distinguished. That's some pretty distinguished company. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, that is very distinguished company, and I will, especially Fiona Staples and Grace Randolph, who writes my favorite comic book that you hate, by the way, Superbia.
Sorry, Erin Gray.
My arch nemesis.
Erin Gray as well.
Erin Gray is Superbia with like superheroes and the cream of the crop. Is it? That's so no pressure.
Yeah, congratulations.
Not at all. Appreciate it. Appreciate the ability to come on here, and hopefully if I can't make you guys look like fools, then at the very least I can come and talk comics and have fun.
Well, I'm sorry, you know, Mo isn't here, so you won't be able to accomplish your first goal, but
yes,
but the second
I know
one,
that
for
was
sure.
my biggest goal, my biggest excitement when I got the email asking when you guys asked me to be on was I thought to myself, I finally get to meet Mo. But unfortunately, it's just not going to happen. It's a dream for another day.
Yep, his religious exploits are continuing. So hopefully next week he will return. But
Jessica, I'm gonna do. We usually plugs at the end, but because Jessica, do give people an idea of where they find you on the internet, what kind of places you put your comic foot down.
And gives you a reason to be on this show?
Where do I not put my comic foot down? On Twitter, I'm known as Charming Red, which is the mom who reads comics. Trying to gather together all the moms of the world who read comics, not just for their kids' sake, but for their own sake, because, I'm sorry, we're out there, and we love comic books. There's also the Moms Read Comics channel on YouTube. You can just do a search for Moms Read Comics on YouTube, or you can go to youtube.com/momsreadcomics, all one word together, and we have a channel on there where we have several different videos for you to look at, including the Hangout, which is featured on comicosity.com, the show's sponsor, I believe, and I also write the Mom's Cover Watch on comicosity.com, and then I have a Tumblr, and I have Google+, and you can pretty much find Moms Read Comics on almost any social platform out there.
Very in-depth. So, alright, now we typically do the news at this point, and as you may have mentioned, there is a sponsor associated with this, so perhaps, Jessica, you should mention the sponsor name, because I'm not 100% sure that you mentioned it earlier.
Yeah, I believe the sponsor is Comicosity.com, the website by comic lovers for comic lovers, featuring pretty much nothing but comics news. And Keith, I believe you have the headlines of the day for everyone, do you not?
I do have this week's news.
That's right, the weekly news with Cub Reporter K.
We're going to start with some sales numbers. Now, Justice League of America, number one, is the number one DC comic for about 7 years. The numbers on this comic are astounding. 307,000 are the estimates given on the Comic Chronicles, the site that we like to get our numbers from, making it, of course, the number one comic for February. And I am now frightened of who one-ups them on their 53 covers that they had for this issue. They didn't beat the Mars Attacks record, but at 307,000 copies, I wish them luck. Uncanny X-Men number 2, Batman number 3, Justice League number 4, and Superior Spider-Man takes spots 5 and 6. So, go ahead, Jessica.
I was just going to say, so that was the traditional cover that had that top spot, or...
That would be the combined, actually. All of these numbers are combined.
Oh, all the combined numbers.
So it would
okay.
be all 53 covers combined.
You know, I saw the cover for the Alaska version, and I was actually kind of surprised because I thought it looked really bad. I didn't like the way that they overlaid the flag into it, so I thought it looked like it was added later and cheaply. Hmm. Like, it wasn't a very attractive look for me.
I honestly, the only cover I paid attention to was the only cover that mattered, and that was the Texas cover, which I own. So, and was the number one individual state selling cover as well. I don't know if you gentlemen knew that.
I did not. See, look, I already
for
have
those
to,
who do not know, I live in Texas. So
I didn't even know there was a state called Texas. So, really...
See, even your cat knows that that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, he just said, don't mess with Texas, right? Yeah.
Exactly. He's calling Balderdash on you.
All right, what else we got for news here? Remember Insurgent? We reviewed Insurgent a few weeks ago here on the show, about 2 months back on the show.
Was that the series that nobody liked and figured would only last like 2 issues?
Mm-hmm. So the six issue miniseries Insurgent is canceled at issue 3.
Oh man!
Oh, I'm just so shocked.
We didn't beat the spread.
So Price is Right rules. Anyone who picked 2 still wins.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah, that was garbage.
We've been waiting on some new titles from DC, and we won't be getting them. DC will be at 50 ongoing series in June. They did not add the final 2 that we were waiting on. I believe this is only the 3rd month since the new 52 that it hasn't been 52 books. This will be the 4th month. One of those months was when the Batman Inc. issue got delayed, though, so it doesn't necessarily count.
No, I don't. I technically don't count that month, but I have to say it is very surprising that they... are not considering some of the books that they have been adding. I mean, you're entitled to your opinions, but for example, Threshold. They're willing to add a book like Threshold in order to, I assume, to keep up their numbers with the 52 and everything else, but then in June being allowing it to fall back when they have so much possibility in their canon and in their realm and to not take advantage of it, I just find very interesting.
I understand the desire to do new characters and stuff like that, but Threshold was not... honestly, there's 2 things that they spun out of the whole Rise of the Third Army kind of thing, and between Threshold and Larfleeze, and I'm kind of confused as to why myself, but...
Well, and I guess that's kind of my whole point, is the fact that they're willing to go out there on a limb with such unusual books that nobody would ever really think of, but then they're not going to go ahead and take this opportunity in June where it seems like people are focused. Is it just my point of view, but I feel like in the summertime people pay attention to comics more so than perhaps other times in the year. Or there's certain months in the year where, and June being one of those months, where you just kind of, you just pay attention to it, because...
I think there's the summer jobs thing, kind of traditionally, you know, college, comics having been aimed at kind of college age for a long time, maybe a little less now, but it used to be that, you know, June, July, August were when you did your big crossover events, that's when you did your big money grabs, And then September, as you know, college students get their student loans, because you have, you know, New 52 was in September, Zero Issues were in September, Death of Superman was in October, I think. But you usually aim that stuff around kind of late summer, early fall. My only guess on this is that they didn't want it to be a wave. They canceled the books as a block like that, but they're launching them a little bit at a time, as opposed to if you do four or six books, it's a wave, and they're not calling this one a wave. I do, you know, looking at some of the books, like you look at the last full wave, when we added Phantom Stranger, Sword of Sorcery, Talon, and Team 7, and we've lost two of those books already. The previous wave, Earth 2, World's Finest, Batman Inc., Dial H, Ravengers, and GI Combat, and we've got two of those gone, one, and at least one of them on the bubble. So the waves haven't necessarily been a huge success. Maybe a couple of books at a time might be a better plan.
I think better books would be a better plan.
Yeah, that's when it comes to Team 7 and GI Combat, that's probably probably better advice than anything else in the marketing. Could they have been any good?
Yeah,
I understand the sales perspective of it, but I still feel like Sword of Sorcery was just a big shocker all around. I mean, it's one of those books where every time I go to it, every time I pick it up and read it, whether or not I'm looking forward to reading it, by the time I'm done with it, I'm always glad that I read it. I always feel satisfied after I've read it.
I like the book. You know, I thought it was really good. The only thing that I'll point to is the lack of success for Amethyst. And I mean, eventually it just comes down to a point where I understand a miniseries, but I don't understand attempting to pawn off a regular series on us, because the character has not successfully proven that she can carry a book.
This is true. I mean, you're talking this. I own the entire first run of Amethyst and some other issues from 1983, 84, 85. And I also understand the fact that she works very well in the miniseries, but there's also to a point where I don't know if she needs to be in a team book or what, because in the end, at least in the 80s, she was a very powerful, very important character, especially when it came down to Infinite Crisis and everything else. And so, I don't know, perhaps it's a little bit of back loyalty on my part to her, because she is very different in Sword of Sorcery.
But yeah, for sure.
I was just thinking, Justice League Dark has become a bit of a catch-all for these characters, as their own books don't work.
Yes.
There's no Wildstorm book that does this. All the Wildstorm characters that are failing haven't been grouped together in a nice Wildcats book yet. But Justice League Dark has been picking up some of these characters as they go, such as Frankenstein. And I wouldn't be surprised, I mean, we've already had John Constantine in Sword of Sorcery, I wouldn't be surprised that she'll end up there. There is a limit to how many of these characters that Justice League Dark can pick up, though, and still kind of not feel just cobbled together. Yeah.
The 300-character book that everybody who doesn't fit just goes there. All right, what's next on your list, Keith?
All right, so we talked about Superman Unchained last week. One of the things that we didn't talk about was the price tag on this bad boy. We hadn't heard that part yet. Superman Unchained will be $4.99 for its number one issue. It will include a poster, and the poster is said to be part of the story.
Hmm.
It is actually a story page.
Just seems like a dumb idea.
Because nobody's going to...
Posters. You know, posters work so well in magazines and stuff like that. You know, crates. Always great.
What we've done is trading cards.
Yeah. I'm telling you, the trading cards are around the corner. They really are.
Covers. We've got chromium covers.
The 90s are back, folks. They're just back.
The number one book had 53 variants. We can complain all we want about variants. If we wouldn't buy them, then it might... I've got two problems. One is that I think Jim Lee books look like poster books to start with. and it's like 15 poster images to start. Number two is that I really think they should have stepped right up and said whether $4.99 is going to be the digital price.
If
they're saying $4.99 is because of the poster, which is fair enough, it is what it is. You're chiseling for a buck. My tablet doesn't fold out, so is it going to be a $3.99 book?
Probably not.
Your tablet, not a transformer.
Yep. That's right. My tablet turns into a 27-inch screen if I just open the Superman Unchained. And two more stories to go. One, confirmation from Brian Q. Miller that April 12th, Smallville, digital first, starts a new storyline called Argo that features Booster Gold and the Legion of Superheroes.
So how big are you beaming right now?
I was, when I saw the listing for the June print copy of the Smallville, when they package a couple of them together and it mentioned Booster, I started doing the math, trying to figure out, okay, how long before the print copy is digital copy so I can start my countdown properly.
Now that does lead me to ask you, which, I mean, this may be my ill knowledge of you showing, but have you seen the Smallville episode featuring Booster Gold?
I have, and on the 2011 We Talkies Award, it was awarded a special We Talkie for best episode of a TV show featuring Booster Gold. Now, in fairness, it was not a broad, it wasn't a broad field to compare to. So, you know, a bit political as far as the voting went.
Yeah, because Smallville tends to focus more on his, how should I put this, his flagrant personality issues or problems or every absolute thing about him that makes you want to completely despise him. I feel like that's just my personal opinion about his appearance in Smallville, is that it's all the bad things about Booster Gold amplified times five. So it does make me slightly curious as to how he's going to come across in the comic.
He just doesn't care.
I survived extreme justice. There is no way to break that character.
Oof, but they tried. They tried hard.
They cut his arm off and put him in an Iron Man armor. And still, he's back.
I'm just impressed that we managed to go a full two episodes without actually bringing up Booster Gold at all. And I mean, and there's another part of me that's really glad that we managed to avoid bringing up Booster Gold in the episode 69, We Talk Comic Gets Dirty.
Well, okay, here's the thing. I have to be completely honest. I did not listen to that episode. I listen to you guys every week, and I did not listen to that episode. I started it, and then I stopped it. And I just decided, you know what, I'm not going to listen to this episode. And you guys really didn't bring up Booster Gold in the week before? I could have sworn you had.
No, I'm pretty sure that we've been 2 weeks sans Booster, but...
I'll be honest, Jessica, I didn't listen to the last episode and I was in it. I just had my ears covered the entire episode. That's why Chris isn't back. He's furious that we're not talking about Adult Comics this week. He's taking a week off because he's very upset that we weren't, that this wasn't part two.
He needs his porn, doesn't he?
Because I never hear the movie review until the episode is live. His movie review of the Avengers Triple X parody is brilliant. That was some good work. I never get to tell him that until the next episode and he's not here. One last story. In case you didn't notice it, Marvel Comics broke Comixology a couple of days ago.
No! Are you sure?
It may have been mentioned to you. It's still a bit buggy. I still had some issues. This morning, I still had issues with the site not loading the new comics. So
I should tell you about how mine are loading perfectly for me now.
My tablet is fine. My tablet's been fine since Tuesday, but Today I could load the site on Firefox, but Explorer would not show me the new comics. So
well, that's your problem. It was Explorer.
Yeah,
that's a whole separate conversation. But
so what happened was Marvel tried to give away 700 comics, and everyone tried to use the tablet to download them all at once, and it made Comixology crash smashy. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, even Comixology support on Twitter themselves said, sorry, we broke the internet. They just flat out admitted to the fact that it was completely their fault.
Now, everything else aside with this, I have been a big fan of Comixology and particularly their support, Comixology support for a long time. I've always thought they had some of the best tech support.
Oh, yes.
The couple of days that the site was down, they were incredible. They were on 24 hours a day. They were reassuring people that everything was going to be okay. Yes, you're still going to get 700 free comics. Yes, you're going to be able to get the comics you own now. Yes, we're going to fix all this. They did amazing work getting people to just chill out while they fixed it. Brett, did you try for any free comics?
I did try for free comics. I wound up with 300 and some by the end of it.
Oh, you're gonna hate me.
You used the Brett? Did you use the website or did you use your tablet?
I started out using my tablet, but quite frankly, it didn't work very well, so I had to go through the website. I wound up doing a fair chunk of it through work.
Okay, Jessica, your count?
I'm actually looking on the website right now to find my final count. It is obscene, to say the least, just pages and pages and pages. I may have gotten over 600 and something comics. I'm sorry. I was off by 100. 500. I got 500 comics.
Nice. I topped out at just a little over 4. I think I wasn't able to add the general Marvel superheroes block to the cart. I did love hitting add all to cart.
That was very,
very
nice.
Rewarding. I enjoyed that.
The funny thing is, sorry, but for me is that I received emails saying that I got everything that I wanted, but not everything really has shown up for me in my comics. So,
they have said that they will be restarting this offer. So I mean, That's a nice range. I mean, for some people who are trying to just download issue by issue off of off their iPad or their tablet, who were talking about 5 or 6 comics, those of us who went to the website and tried it that way have much better numbers. I wasn't gonna read 600 comics on Sunday anyway.
No, but what really got me interested was the fact that it got people who normally would not read specific series, since they were going ahead and doing the add all to cart. They're picking up series and they're looking at books that they never previously would have looked at before, and that was the brilliance of the entire move, was gaining new readers on new books with new characters that they might not have had before. And it seems like a continuation of everything that has been happening online, with people giving away digital codes, with people giving away specifically the codes to number one issues within the Marvel Now series, and gaining all those new readers. It was a brilliant marketing move on Marvel's part. The final outcome may have been somewhat cumbersome, but I think it has instilled enough goodwill into a lot of people who read digital that they're willing to say, you know what, even if I didn't get all my comics, I'm willing to go ahead and go back and give it a try and give Marvel and give Comixology another chance to do this. I mean, even some of my own friends who haven't read comics in years have said, you know what, I'm going to start reading monthlies again because of this.
That's fantastic. I mean, I'm certainly going to be trying so many different books than I would have because of this. And I did the math, and if you got that whole block of X books, I got 14 out of 40 of the Age of Apocalypse. So I'm going to start getting that whole freaking thing. I've been putting it off for so long. But
there was a lot of one-shots. And that was the other thing that surprised me. There were so many one-shots involved that, you know, when you think about it, you know, Marvel could technically be throwing away money by handing out all these one-shot books. But at the same time, if they're getting you interested in these characters and getting you to want to read more about them or storylines occurring around that same time period, then it pays off for them all at once. I mean, for example, there's a Valkyrie one-shot, which, I mean, I immediately downloaded, but because of Fearless Defenders, you know, I wanted to read it. I normally probably never would have touched the thing before, but it was there and it was offered, and so I used it. And at the same time, Keith, you might enjoy rubbing this in. I did go ahead and download Thunderbolts number one.
Woohoo!
So,
but you know, Thunderbolts doesn't get good until 2, 3, 4.
The Punisher's on a team. It never gets good. This is one of the reasons why Keith continues to be my arch nemesis, because he loves Thunderbolt so much. And I'm sorry, but the Punisher in any team book is just, it's just wrong.
Hey,
in
now,
my
I'm,
world.
In all
wrong,
fairness.
But it's a plot point of why it's wrong.
Yes.
It is addressed that this is probably not a great idea.
Excuses.
In all fairness. I'm the guy who said that Thunderbolts is better than any Batman book being published currently.
Now that is, especially after this month, especially after today's books, that is extremely wrong. But to each his own, I am surrounded by Thunderbolts lovers, people. You need to have sympathy for me right now. I've got nowhere to hide and no one to back me up.
I did see in your cover watch, though, on Comicosity that you picked the Thunderbolts number 6 cover. Those are amazing.
After Fearless Defenders. After they are. Now, I can admit when art is good. Mm-hmm. No matter what the topic matter of the book is, no matter how absurd the topic matter of the book is, such as the Punisher being on in a team book.
But that's, you know, what we like about it, the absurdity.
Some people have a hang up with, you know, Doc Ock being Spider-Man. Mine is Punisher being in a team book. But I can at least admit when the artwork on the cover is good.
All right. And now, before we leave the news, how does DC one-up this? How can DC possibly... I mean, DC had been such a leader in digital, and now Marvel has just leaps and bounds ahead. I mean,
are you kidding? DC, just...
This Project Gamma I didn't even bring up the Marvel will be doing weekly digital first comics. So they're looking at chipping away at that area that DC has taken the lead.
Here's the thing. To me, despite the fact that DC has been doing these digital first comics, at least in my mind, Marvel has took the lead a long time ago, especially with the Marvel Now, took the lead over the digital revolution, however you want to say it, by giving away the codes in their books. And I mean, I know DC gives away codes in their books, but they're in sealed bags. They're hard to get to. Not a lot of comic shops order them, and they're an additional, they're $4.99 instead of the regular $3.99, so they're even more unaffordable. I don't know. To me, I feel like DC has almost a year's worth of catching up to do, because yes, they've got the digital first books, and those are nice, but I don't know. I guess I just feel like that's not everything.
There's a bit of perception problem on the Marvel codes. I mean, all of the Marvel books that have codes are $3.99 as opposed to $2.99.
Yes. So yes, and I can deal with paying $3.99. It's paying DC $4.99 for them, and I don't know what it is about the sealed bag, but that just really irks me. And maybe it's just one more of those 90s style things that I just can't get over.
Hands up, who remembers X-Force?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I got two of them in my house right now.
I just downloaded it on Comixology, but other than but again, my tablet doesn't fold out, nor is it in a poly bag. And that's the news. Now what the heck else do we want to talk about this week?
In honor of all the number ones, perhaps we should talk about some number ones and stuff like that. Perhaps we should talk about a number one that we especially liked, number ones that were good and the rest of the series is absolute crap, number ones that weren't so good, but the series itself was actually pretty good. Perhaps we should talk about something like that. Jessica, why don't you start us off?
I have many number ones that I could talk about. Specifically, I thoroughly enjoyed Superbia number one, but I will move off of that. Just to give Keith some relief, a number one that I truly enjoyed and I feel like did not necessarily reflect where the series was going. And it's a recent one that I'm going to bring up, but I'm going to talk about Mara number one, because the entire first issue mainly focused on her and who she was. It's, if you don't know about Mara, it's this dystopian, we call it a dystopian society, and yet everybody is very high-tech and seems to be living very luxurious lifestyles, but it's very clear that everyone's life is very controlled from point A to point D while growing up. And so the entire book is spent on explaining this society, and it's not until the very last page that you even see that, or the last few pages, that you see something odd is happening with the main character. And I feel like it's in the middle of the series right now. It's a 6-issue miniseries by Brian Wood for Image Comics. And I feel like it's only now starting to feel like what the true subject matter is about. And yet at the same time, that first issue between Ming Doyle's drawing and Jordi Belair's monochromatic colors, it's just a very beautiful, very well-written book. On the same note, not to go too off topic, but I feel like Fearless Defenders was a very good first book. I know some of you guys have different opinions about that. I feel like Fearless Defenders was a very humorous book. It made me laugh extremely hard, but at the same time, I do understand those of you who have concerns about the somewhat cheesecake and inapproachable artistic style presented in that number one issue, and I deeply feel that the future of this series will only get better, especially since it seems like this series is willing to make fun of itself, especially on the covers. Let me just throw a ton of stuff at you guys right away.
So a Marvel Now book and a creator-owned Dark Horse, right, Mara?
Image comic. It's an Image comic, but I mean, let's face it. I mean, I have a pull list the size of Mount Rushmore, and I read a ton. I read a ton.
Well, I think the strongest number one I've seen over the past probably year. I mean, we've seen so many amazing ones from Image, but I mean, Manhattan Projects and Saga were. And Panzerfaust were all like, just really great. Hook you in, gave you lots happening, introduced the characters, and then had that great twist at the end. I think you meet something at the end that really makes it feel like it's not a one shot. Like you do too much of that, and you get to the end, you're like, okay, well, if there's others, then you know those could happen.
I kind of agree with you that there needs to be that twist at the end, and that's what made Mara so interesting for me, was having that slight twist at the end. But at the same time, I have to be completely blunt. I mean, I love Saga. I own every single issue since the number one issue, but at the same time, that first issue did not have me completely sold. It was so out there, and I knew it was Brian K. Vaughan, and I've read Why the Last Man, but at the same time, it was so out there that I was not completely sold with that number one issue. So, and Peter Panzerfaust, I have genuinely come to love that series wholeheartedly, but at the same time, after that first issue, it seemed where it was going was at a very slow pace, so I was not convinced right away with those.
Well, I think pacing is a real problem, though, for a lot of the number ones that I'm seeing now. Like, there's a lot of books, and I'll even mention one, you know, later on. But that, you know, all I'm getting out of the story is what I feel like should be a quarter of the act in the first issue, and they're taking like one issue's worth of stuff and breaking it down into and stretching it out into four issues. And so, you know, I'm not even sure we're getting anything good out of that.
I feel like a lot of the authors are trying to create world building type scenarios, and I think that may be what's missing with as far as what you were talking about with the pacing. It's like they all want to do, they all want to build this world up so that you understand where the story is going to go. And it's very nice to have all that background, but there's going to be a lot of readers out there who do not have the time, the inclination, or the funds to put up with that.
Yeah, something still has to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
And like you were saying on Saga, I mean, you trust Brian K. Vaughan, I trust Brian K. Vaughan, that I'm going to give it 6 issues before I decide one way or the other where I'm at with a Brian K. Vaughan book. And there are those that would do that with Hickman. I don't have that trust with Hickman, so when the Avengers books didn't hook me on the first issue and nothing, it felt like nothing happened besides something I had read 3 times before where the Avengers all decide that they're going to form the team that was in the movie, I'm not going to give that book 6 issues.
And see, I'm glad I did give that book 6 issues. I agree with you that first issue did not have me. It did not have me whatsoever, and I honestly did not have that trust in Hickman either because I had not read enough of his stuff to give him that trust. And someone on Twitter just told me, you need to stick with it. And so I did. And it also didn't hurt that there were digital codes in the book that I wasn't going to read and somebody else would, and I could, you know, give them away and make other people happy. That helped out. But I'm really glad that I stuck with that series because it is going to some really unique, and at least I feel unique and crazy places for an Avengers book to go to. So, but you're right. That was a number one issue, the Avengers issue that kind of just fell completely flat, and you were just like, okay, moving on. What's next?
I mean, I'll say the same thing about New Avengers. Like, I didn't really care for, like, I don't think that many people cared for New Avengers. Now, I mean, I am a Hickman fan, but for me, you know, it was one of those cases where, like, oh, Black Panther's in it, whatever, throw it away, and, you know, hopefully something good comes of it when it crosses over with a real Avengers book. But now, for me, a few issues in, and I'm saying New Avengers is my favorite book in Marvel, period. Like, I love where they're going with it, and, you know, I actually like it more than Avengers. So it's just one of those cases where it kind of exploded for me in that regard. Whereas Uncanny Avengers is the complete opposite. I really liked the first issue, really thought it was going great places. And then the rest of it's just being like, yeah, you know, it's not as good as the first issue.
Well, I have to say issue number 2 was, I think, more about emotional connections and dealing with some of the aftermath of all of that, and at the same time, I have yet to read Uncanny X-Men number 3.
Avengers?
I'm sitting actually right here. Oh, Avengers.
If only there weren't 14 books of Uncanny.
Yeah.
Exactly, that's the problem. No, Uncanny Avengers, I stopped after the first one. There were Uncanny Avengers, I was like, there's no way I'm following this down the rabbit hole.
Uncanny Avengers was one that really went off the cliff fast for me. And I really liked that first issue. The only thing I was hesitant on that first issue was that Captain America, who's the leader in every other book, is the second in command. Only he's telling the leader what to do all the time.
He's always tried. Like, there have been many Avengers books where he's tried to not be the leader, and it always happens where he just leads. But I didn't like the way it was written because typically in books I find him leading by example primarily and not actually like, are you sure that's the right idea, Havoc? Are you extra, super, mega, ultra sure that was the right idea? I don't think that was the right idea, Havoc. Shut up, Captain America. Okay, this is my idea, and you wanted me to be leader? Shut up.
It's like a passive-aggressive second-in-command.
Yeah.
Well, we'll do what you think this time. I think we should have talked it over more, Havoc, but whatever you
think. Captain PA.
And, yeah, I mean, my other problem, of course, Brett and I have talked about this, that by the second issue, it was quite clear that what they're doing is retelling Legends, the DC crossover for the F in the 80s. And it's a great story. And Darkseid and Glorious Gottfried are better characters than Red Skull with Professor X's brain in him.
Yep,
and definitely better than.
I'm sorry, but Punisher on a team is better than Red Skull with Professor X's brain in him.
It is. I agree. It's funny. I like funny.
And I will fess up that, that Superbia is better than Onslaught.
Okay, wait a minute now. That's not really admitting much there.
Yes, congratulations, Superbia. You win as better than 2099, The World of Tomorrow. Yes.
I'm sorry, Superbia always wins in my book, so... Oh,
well. I like the first issue myself. I actually even bought it. I bought a physical copy of it.
Okay, except we're going on issue 5 of the ongoing run now. That's the problem.
Yeah, I
need you to catch up, because I need someone to talk to about Bantu.
I apparently should catch up because no, I never read any past the first issue, but
the physical copy is the highest compliment that Brett pays a comic.
It absolutely is. Yep.
Yeah. Mine is trade paperback. Brett is buying anything physically. That is, it might as well be on an altar if he is up the gym.
Yes, I have way less comics than most people, so, no, physical copies. So,
While I, on the other hand, am surrounded by just bins and bins.
I was there. We were there. So. You know, Keith and I, at one point, we made a table and chairs out of comic long boxes.
Wow.
I've lost. I can't remember when we, because Brett had had a store and we had both worked in comic shops in the early 90s. And I think that we had 25 long boxes.
27 actually was our highest count. Yeah.
I can't bring myself to buy long boxes, so I buy these fabric bins from my overlord store, known as the Walmart. And I have way too many of these fabric bins just all over my house, filled with comics. And it wasn't until the other day I thought about the fact that I might be able to bring myself to buy long boxes if I decoupage them first with maybe like some old back issues of Previews or something.
Excellent. I wondered how far we would make it in the episode though before Jessica forgot she wasn't on the Hangout and held something up to the camera. So that folks.
Well, I'm hanging it up to show you guys. Okay, yeah, for everyone listening. Yes, they can see me, and so I'm holding stuff up to the camera to show them. Like I held up the fabric bin. To show them. I'm sorry if I thought having a physical or a visual idea of what it was I was talking about would be helpful to you guys.
No, I love that you brought props.
Personally, I'm just ecstatic that this will be the first and more than likely the last time that the word decoupage is actually used on the podcast.
Hey, just say it. It makes you smile. See, you can't say the word decoupage without smiling.
Absolutely. I'm a firm fan of the word. We just don't use it very often. All right, Keith. So, do you have any older books that you think of when you think of number ones and good, bad, and ugly?
I think John Byrne's Superman number one. When he relaunched the character with Man of Steel, but I actually hadn't read Man of Steel. It was Superman number one was my first exposure to John Byrne's Superman. And it was the reintroduction of Metallo. It was a one-off story that still managed to have a twist at the end and really reestablish who Superman was, new reader-friendly, good action book, set up some threads that would play out for most of Byrne's run as far as the new Lex Luthor. So I think, like, post-Crisis, there were a lot of really great relaunches. Wonder Woman by Perez we were talking about, and I think that they did a really good job of reintroducing characters, there's been ups and downs with New 52. I mean, certainly I'm a big fan of New 52 overall, but as James Robinson keeps pushing over and over, you can only reintroduce a character once. And we've had quite a few that they should have reintroduced them zero times if they were going to do them the way they've done them. Lobo being the worst example, but some of the stuff we've seen in these mid-level books, Team 7 was poorly thought out. Amethyst was so rebuilt that it didn't connect with the existing fans and it didn't make new ones. So, and if the cartoon was the only hope that that this was going to catch on, they probably should use the character that was going to be in the cartoon.
The cartoon was exactly what fans were looking for as far as Amethyst goes, and not delivering on that was just, it was kind of, I mean, Sword of Sorcery was a, it is a very good book, but it is just so wholly different than what was expected for the majority of the market, it feels like.
What is the last issue of Sword of Sorcery?
I want to say 7. It's pretty early. It must be 7.
Yeah,
must
7 be or 8. Early.
Yeah, 7 or 8. But it can't be 7 because GI Combat's already done at 7, so it must be maybe 9.
Because I'm thinking of reading them, but I'm just gonna wait now until the whole damn thing's done. You know, and actually, I'm more gonna wait to see if they have an end.
Her interaction with Constantine is very fun. I mean, of course, anyone's interaction with Constantine is pretty fun, but I mean, still, his cameos in Sword of Sorcery have been very enjoyable the last few issues.
I think my biggest problem with Sword of Sorcery, way off topic now, but who cares? My big problem was the backup stories, and this was a $3.99 book.
Oh, I didn't even read them.
And they were awful, and so it was just a waste of money. It was a complete waste of money. I mean, really, if they just launched this as an Amethyst book at $2.99, it might have had a better chance than what happened. I mean, you know that these, aside from All-Star Western, every one of these two-story books, and of course Batman, Detective, they've all been failures. None of them have worked. The quality has not been there. They tried two war books that were two stories each. Neither one lasted. All-Star Western only sells when it ties in somewhat to the Bat Universe, and more power to them. But every anthology book has died on the vine, and you know Amethyst might have had a chance. Kind of a big misstep for them to make that a $3.99 book, and Threshold will be the same. I can't imagine Threshold's going to last very long either, because it's more than just, I mean, you've got two chances to fail as well as two chances to succeed.
It's just so rare that you ever see the backup story succeed. I mean, even back when Action Comics went to the two stories, I mean, they put major characters into them. Well, you know, Major and Wild Dog. But, you know, they tried to put relatively major characters into them, but they still, you know, it was hard. I mean, it's always hard to read those because you're not sure if you're, are you just reading the first story? Are you just reading the second story? Are you trying to keep up with both? I don't know.
I'm going to go with one of my all-time favorite number ones. Just to get us back to number ones. Why the Last Man?
Yes.
One of the most compelling number ones. Introduced a complete character, you knew exactly what it was, and then it has one of the best twists, Twilight Zone twists, and sets up the entire series in one issue. Everything in that series happens in the first issue. Everything plays out is the payoff of that. It's not several arcs, it's not bits and pieces, it's all there. That last page where he's the only one alive is incredible.
Write it down, folks. This is probably maybe the third time ever I've agreed with Keith about something, but I will completely agree that the first issue of Why the Last Man is an extremely surprising, enjoyable, off-putting, but just a complete read all in one that you can really follow well.
Why was one of the books that actually got me back into comics. When I had been... in college, I had dropped down to, I was regularly buying one book. I was regularly buying Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon's Punisher, Marvel Knights. That was the only thing I got month to month. And I moved back to the city. I was at a comic show and went to my old comic dealer and I said, "What's been coming out that I might like?" And without a moment's hesitation, he picked up the trade paperback of Why the Last Man, put it in my hand, and it was no sales pitch. He just said, "It's this." And that was the one that rekindled my interest in comics.
Why the Last Man also had a very similar effect on me, except that, I mean, it was obviously much later in my life, and I was not collecting any monthly or weekly books at all at that point. And it was just one of those things where I had heard so many people talking about it that I just went out and I bought one of the that first hardbound edition, and I just sat there and I could not stop reading it. And I mean, my children were bugging me, my husband was bugging me, and we were supposed to be going out and doing things, and all I could do was just sit there and read this book.
The same thing happened to me with Fables. Like, I found that I had no actual interest in reading it, but I had purchased it in San Diego for a good cheap price, and so I thought, you know, oh, what the hell, you know, I'll give this a shot. And then my wife actually picked it up, and she wound up reading through the whole thing like super fast. And so I'm like, well, okay, what the hell, you know. So I'm just like killing time. So I read the first issue, and I'm like, oh, wow, this is really good. So then, you know, I just had to keep reading, and that was really what got me on. I found that a lot of when you talk about Why the Last Man, like one of the things that, like, I read all of those through the public library. You know, I found out, hey, they've got all the Why the Last Man trade paperbacks. I'm just gonna order them up and we'll see. And yeah, I think I wound up reading every single one of them within a few weeks, you know, as fast as I could get them from the library, because it is a great series.
All right. Do you want to close this up and do some Wii Views, Brad?
Certainly. Why don't we do some Wii Views? Keith, what are we doing when we do our Wii Views?
Here I come to save the day.
We are saving you from bad comics.
Excellent. All right, then. Well, Jessica, I know we talked about it earlier. I'm gonna throw you right into the mix here. Talk about buddy cops for us.
I'm gonna be completely blunt and honest. I was fully prepared to hate this book because it's about two guys. It's about law enforcement. I mean, looking at it, I was not as familiar with these authors or anything else, and so I was just expecting, you know, kind of a wannabe diehard type of book, and I sat there reading it just laughing my head off, especially when by the time I got two-thirds of the way through the book and realized what it truly was. I got a little lost at first. I had to kind of go back and reread some of it just to make sure that I was reading it right, but I really enjoyed Buddy Cops because of the type of humor that it had. It reminded me a lot of Skull Kickers, especially with the type of sound effects or lack of sound effects, more like descriptors of what was going on around them. But I really did enjoy this book.
All right. Well, I'm gonna put in my two cents right now. I saw that it was Nate Cosby, and I got excited because I really like Cowboy, and so I was interested. But now the thing that I did not expect was the absolute radical departure between Cowboy and Buddy Cops. Like, there is absolutely no question that this is a completely different type of book. But like you, Jessica, I completely found myself laughing out loud at reading it. And I just thought, you know, it's a cute concept, you know, telling the thousands of adventures of these two completely mismatched cops. And it's just funny and it's just interesting. So for me, I would love to see this book as more than just a one shot.
I just wanted to interject real quick and say I liked how they broke it down into vignettes about how it was. It wasn't just telling one big long story, but it was breaking it down into pieces and parts and showing, you know, a little bit of story here, a little bit of story there, and giving you a glimpse into their lives, and it made it more accessible, I feel like.
All right, well, I'm glad I let you talk, because what I really wanted to say was I'm glad they broke it into vignettes, because I thought that really allowed the stories to I did really like the, you know, the three little short stories rather than one big thing that stuck around too long. I thought the adventure was better for having you know, about an 8-pager. This would be a great digital first book, like a great like 15-pager a week.
Oh, for sure.
Yes.
This book was so fun. You weren't for the cover. It's hard to tell what's going to be. It looks a little light, but and then you know the about the characters page, which was great, the little backstory in each character. When it gets to the end of Dennis's description and just says he's Uranus,
that really threw me off.
My favorite. The good thing about cheap jokes, you can afford a lot of them. I love this book. Was so much fun. I just love this book. It was, I just, you know, stupid grin on my face the whole time I'm reading this book. I read it when on the drive, the commute this morning with my wife. She drives. I read comics, and I wanted to show her parts, but you know that's dangerous when you drive. what a great book! I absolutely loved it. Unanimous.
All right. Woo. Wow, that's right, a first.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Right. Without Mo here to hate stuff.
I know. It's amazing.
Well, I will say this. It is a very, I don't know how to put this delicately. It's a very crass book. But that's part of the, it's very on purpose. And I think that's the thing. When somebody is out there to be lewd or crude just for the sake of being lewd or crude and it's not funny, that really, whether or not it should, that tends to offend me. But in this case, when I was sitting there reading this, it was a very crass book, and yet it was hilarious. The way it was done, the pacing of it all, and how they were going about it in order to kind of show the juxtaposition between these two characters, it really did kind of win me over.
Now you see, Jessica, this is why we do the Wii Views, and this is why we review things that are out of things that we might normally pick up.
And I'll tag this is Dark Horse One Shot, and it reprints stories from Dark Horse Comics Presents.
Excellent. All right, Keith, give us the next Dark Horse book, which will be Sledgehammer 44, number one.
I will admit that I was quite kerfuffled when I saw that this was on the list of review books, because I have told Brett that I do not want to see another Mignola book. we have reviewed so many Mike Mignola universe books on this show, because there's a new number one every 3 weeks. And despite that, I enjoyed this book. I did not expect to. It is a story by Mike Mignola and John Arcudi with art by Jason Latour. Sledgehammer 44 is number one of two. And World War II story, it is a homage to John Severin. And I don't know, I enjoyed it. It'll be tough for me to come back for a second issue, because it's got a cliffhanger, but it's, I don't actually care if I read more story. I enjoyed it kind of as it was. It does remind me of the old, like, you know, Severin Savage Tales kinds of stories, from back early 80s. I kind of wish it was a one-shot instead of two, actually. I think it was just, if it was a little more compact, it would be really, really great. It's a robot story, a robot's fighting Nazis. Then there's a Nazi robot that fights the Allies robot. That was pretty fun. I'm going to give this like a tentative comeback for the second issue. I mean, if it was four, I absolutely wouldn't be back. But two, I'll probably finish it.
All right, well, I'm going to give Chris's review first. Giant robots, check. Fighting Nazis, check. You know, and robots on like page three or whatever it was, maybe page six. But there was lots of big explosions and lots of the elements. I'll admit, you know, when I saw it, I originally just saw the title and I thought to myself, hey, Sledgehammer 44, what, I don't know what that's about. Then I popped it open and I'm like, oh, damn it, it's a Mignola-verse book. Keith's gonna hate this. But I'm glad you liked it, and I thought it was a good book too. I echo your sentiments, pretty much. I'm sure that Chris is gonna be in for this one. I know, but I feel the same way about almost all of these Mignola-verse books. I like them, but I never get around to reading the next issue. Jessica?
I'm not going to be back. Just flat out, I'm not going to be back. I was raised a history buff. I was raised to appreciate especially World War II stories and things like that. And that's probably one of the reasons why I love Peter Panzerfaust so much. But this book just had absolutely nothing for me. And reading it, and maybe it's because of my lack of prior knowledge as far as these books go, but going into it, I felt like I'm missing something. Halfway into it, I felt like I'm missing something. And by the time I finished it, I felt like I am missing something. And I'm not a big robot fan either. I mean, while everybody else, you know, falls in love with Iron Giant and all those things and AI style, I mean, they just don't appeal to me. So from the very beginning, there was a few very interesting things about this book. I really enjoyed the artwork because I like kind of more of those, monochromatic or, color story styles within books. But overall, I was just kind of like, all right, yeah, I've read that. Moving on to something else at this point.
All right. Well, why don't you give us the our last book of the week, which is Wolverine number one.
This was another book. I don't purposely go out of my way to hate Wolverine. But I definitely purposely avoid Wolverine books because he is everywhere. Wolverine is just everywhere, so if I just read the books that I like, he's going to end up showing up no matter what. So reading a book that was strictly about him was very new and different for me, and I very much enjoyed it. This book did a very good job of making it clear that this is the... I don't know if you want to call it the current timeline of Wolverine, but this is definitely the Wolverine who has been working with the X-Men for a long time, who is now a leader and probably a professor in this universe. He's very calm and collected. He's got his mind together about things, and he's very much thinking about the consequences of his actions. And the thing that threw me off about this book was the same thing that threw me off about the latest arc on Superior Spider-Man, which was just the heavy amount of human casualty and random mass violence going on in the book with little to no explanation as why it was happening. For those who don't know, Wolverine number one sets up a story where Wolverine is basically in a shopping mall with what appears to be a madman on a killing spree, and the little boy who's kind of caught in the crossfire of it all. And it, as a parent, it was books like that are very hard for me to read. I still read them, but them showing up in basically in the Marvel universe as compared to more of an independent comic book universe has been very startling to me lately. So I enjoyed it, but with, I guess, some trepidation.
You know, I totally get where you're coming from on that. Obviously, the being a parent as well, it's the same kind of thing that affects me. I try to distance myself from it simply because it's a comic book, but... I do go out of my way to hate Wolverine, but the first thing that got me on this was that just in reading the write-up, the first little blurb, and it said, he was taken by a government agency, and it doesn't say a Canadian government agency, and I got pissed off about that. You know, it's just like, are you trying
Canadians
to steal?
Canadians always wanted your glory.
Yeah, like we have very
only
few.
Got one secret government agency.
Yes.
you have like 14.
Yeah. For those who are not clear, Wolverine, Canadian. It's all the Canadians' fault that we have Wolverine.
Well, and you know, and they
that up, we're moving on.
And they say that at the end, you know, like everybody's favorite Canadian, and I'm like, well, thank you, but you know, like that part just got me right off the bat. When I talk about Wolverine, it's one of those cases where I say, like, this to me is a prime example of that we've taken, you know, one issue worth of story and stretched it into four. I haven't read the rest of it, but there wasn't that much story in issue one for me. I found myself really itching to have more done. But, you know, by the end, I mean, yeah, okay, so he runs off chasing, you know, the bad guy. And I'm like, that's your ending? Really?
And see, to me, I actually had the opposite opinion. I actually felt like they had crammed a lot into this issue because they reintroduced and summarized Wolverine for people who are not familiar with him, which, by the way, how are you not familiar with Wolverine?
That's what I say, you know, like
a rock. But I mean, they summarize and give a good introduction to Wolverine because there honestly are DC people out there who are just trying Marvel for the first time and assume everything they've seen in the movies is completely wrong, which for the most part it is. But on the next note, I mean, they provide. I mean, as disturbing as it is, they provide a lot of action and a lot of backdrop in that it seemed like they were laying the groundwork for how unusual a situation he found himself caught in. And I think they were also trying to establish very clearly how large his healing factor is for those who are not familiar with him. To me, this felt like, and Keith, I know you and I wrote an article about this the other week, about, you know, what makes a good jumping on issue or starting point issue for a new reader. And I felt like this was specifically written for not for Wolverine fans, but for new readers, people who, you know, were interested in the character but had no clue where to start.
I mean, you know, I see where your point is. I think I've just had an issue with some of the Marvel books where I just don't feel like I just don't like the cliffhanger very much. Now, that being said, the writing at the end, you know, just the little letter, the like beginning of the letters page, and they mentioned that they've got a really cool character that's going to blow our mind, that's going to show up at the end of issue two. That actually hooked me significantly more than the issue did. So I will definitely be in for a second issue. You know, basically what I will say is that this is probably good enough that I would consider reading the first arc, but I'm not saying that it's good enough that I would ever consider going past that first arc.
And the thing is, you know, like I said, I never buy a Wolverine issue, but they've at least got me for the first arc at this point. At least.
For those who are a fan of,
I never thought I'd say that about a Wolverine book.
For those who are a fan of Naked Wolverine, this is their book. this is the book of Naked Wolverine. They should have called it Naked Wolverine. That would have been. Then they could have
had naked. Majority of the book.
Then they could have launched like regular Wolverine.
Well, his
next
clothes can't magically heal themselves, can they?
Tracksuit Wolverine is the action figure I want now, though. I want that action figure.
So apparently,
that tracksuit was awesome.
Adidas Wolverine.
Yeah, apparently, unstable molecules don't work against that blaster. Yeah.
I do agree that as far as introducing new readers, this is a really solid book as far as that goes. The art, Davis and Farmer, who, you know, have been a team for 30 years, 25 years, you know, it's really solid art. I did find the story went by really quickly. I said to my wife that I needed to read my homework for tonight before we could watch a TV show. And 5 minutes later, I'm like, oh, I guess I'm done.
Yeah, it was lightning fast. I was actually thinking to myself, did Jeff Johns jump over to write Wolverine? Because this is really quick.
I mean, that's it. Even though it read fast.
I guess
it read fast, but I at the same time, actually, I do agree that it was quite a bit of story happened. I mean, which just, you know, and maybe that's a good thing that it's narratively dense without being, you know, regular dense. It's not a word.
See, I'm a fan of I'm a fan of those styles of books because I do not have a lot of reading time. I do not have a lot of downtime because it is a given that every 3 to 5 minutes, I'm going to be interrupted by someone at my knees begging for something. So to have a book that reads quickly and yet has so much story was very appealing to me.
I do agree with that one, absolutely.
Yeah, storyline-wise, I will say that as a cat owner, I can't really speak to parental issues. I enjoy the story. I'm intrigued too. I think I'm intrigued enough to come back. When they did Schism, I picked Team Cyclops, so I haven't really followed the Wolverine side of things for about a year and a half. I like that they actually didn't focus on X-Men stuff in this. They did make a point of finding a story point for him to say, I'm an Avenger, codename Wolverine, here's my ID, and so that actually establishes quite a bit of the character in a really simple way, where you understand he explains that he's a mutant, he explains what that means, the healing factor is demonstrated instead of talked about. So as far as jump-ons or introductory issues, it's one of the most solid out of the Marvel Nows. It didn't wow me the way that some of them have, but it's a rock-solid book. And, when he starts introducing, what's it called, plot, then I think it'll be an interesting book.
And I can't speak for Mo, since I technically have never even met the man, but I feel like I need to play Mo at this point and basically say what he said the other week about, that's all you can ask for is a solid book that hits all the points it needs to hit. It may not be surprising, and it may not, completely wow you, but as long as it's a solid written book, that's all you can really ask for.
That was a terrific Mo impression.
It's interesting because I read Ultimate Wolverine number one as well, and I think I liked the story more, but at the same time it was a horrible jumping on point because it's there's so much going on, and I'm like, I'm not an Ultimate Universe reader, and I'm just like, holy crap, who's that? I don't know who that is. Wow, what's going on? there's just stuff flying at you from all angles, and it's just like, okay, it's a pretty good story, but a terrible jumping on point.
Just out of curiosity, what's the average read time on a comic, and what's like a comfortable read time? I average probably 10 minutes. And if it's kind of like 5, it feels like it was a little quick. If it's more than 10, it feels like it's a bit dense. Where do you guys stand?
I would agree with that completely. Like, yeah, 5 or even less. I mean, hell, I honestly think I read Wolverine in like 2 or 3, but,
I've read Jim Lee books in like 3 or 4. The first Justice League, I think it was 2.5 minutes.
Yeah.
The first Justice League.
Yeah, I do feel that way though. Like, I mean, 10 minutes.
I don't know if it's because I'm female or what it is. Because, I mean, reading actual books with nothing but words, I was always known growing up as just flying through those. But when I read comics, I actually tend to read those much slower, and maybe it's because I'm sitting there and I'm just pouring through the art, and then I tend to go back and reread places and compare it with the panels and what's going on. So for me, an average book, when I'm truly enjoying it, well, the average book for me actually takes about 20 minutes. Now, I mean, Wolverine definitely did not take that long for me, but I also had lots of other things going on at the time that I was reading it. But so for me, my average read time is probably a little bit longer than your read time is for you gentlemen.
Yeah, like I'm happy at 10. I'm okay at 15, and if it gets to 20, then I'm pretty much I'm wondering what the hell I'm doing. But there's just so many damn comics to read, so I'm still trying to catch up from the 10,000 that's on my read pile. So
I got 400 books from Marvel this week. What the hell are they doing?
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
Jerks giving me 400 free comics.
All right, Jessica, why don't you start plugging your stuff, and we'll get ready to go out.
I am Jessica Boyd, known as at Charming Red on Twitter, the mom who reads comics. Also, the mom who reads comic or moms read comics on YouTube, as well as moms read comics on Tumblr. I also write the Moms Cover Watch on Comicosity every week, as well as doing reviews, previews, and other things. And of course, the Hangout every Monday night.
I sense a theme in there, something about moms, but
just a little theme.
Just a little thing. Keith?
All right, you can follow me on Twitter, Cub Reporter K. My most recent piece for Comicosity was the debut of the He Said, She Said column.
Oh, who do you write that with? Huh, I wonder.
Some mom.
Mo. It's Mo.
He said, Mo said. That's not a bad name.
No, that's pretty common, too.
I'm not on Tumblr. I don't have a YouTube channel. Lots of dads read comics. There's no market there for you, but.
Yeah, I know. It's too true. All right. Well, if you do want to get a hold of us, then you can reach us at comics. That's comics, plural, at wetalkpodcast.com. Let's see now. I'm Brett, B-R-E-T-T, _ We Talk on Twitter, so you can follow me. I do write the Access All Ages comic book column on Comicosity, so all three of us are Comicosity folk, but otherwise, you should check out the Comics Podcast Network, because they're friends of ours, and they like us, and we like them. Okay, and one more part of our show. Chris is going to join us with a comic book attractions. Otherwise, I think that it's pretty good time, because I'm sure there's people who have to go to bed. And I think we're... Oh, sorry! Découpage! There we go.
OUT. There you go. Découpage.
Your product, the best of its kind in the world, presents The Adventures of Super Pup. Faster than the speediest jet. More powerful than the mightiest rockets. Able to fly around the world faster than you can say Super Pup.
Yep, that's Super Pup. And only you and I know that Super Pup is really Bart Bent, star reporter for the Daily Bugle. Wow!
Wow. As you heard, we got a doozy of a comic book attraction today. The part of the show where I remind you of comic book attractions, both good and bad, that should be seen, watched, and enjoyed for what they are. In the past, I've asked for suggestions for comic book attractions, and the guys have been more than helpful, offering a plethora of choices. In fact, Brett suggested that I watch Superman the Musical, and Keith, he suggested the old Power Pack television pilot that's out there somewhere. But I've never really been all that good at following instructions, so in my own perverse way, this is what I did. I combined the two. I went out and found the two Superman pilots offered up after George Reeves' death. That's right, I watched Adventures of Super Pup, the television pilot from 1961, and also from 1961, Adventures of Superboy. The Adventures of Superman ran from 1950 for 6 seasons, starring George Reeves, to much aplomb. This was a very popular series and made George Reeves a star. Unfortunately, George Reeves met with an unfortunate end that has been chronicled in movies such as Hollywoodland with Ben Affleck. I have my own personal theories. I really loved this television series as a kid. I was a little bit young to have seen it even in rerun, but even as a small child, I'd seek this out. This isn't a comic book attraction of Adventures of Superman. I do want to do Superman versus the Mole Men at some point, but this is not that podcast. In 1961, the producers of Adventures of Superman wanted to capture the magic again. So they offered up to television pilots, and I'll start off with the less egregious of the two. They did exactly what the comic books did when they needed another title. They went to Superboy.
Superboy. Yes, the adventures of Superboy. Incredible boy of steel, powerful, fearless, invulnerable. Only survivor of the doomed planet Krypton, home of a race of fine and noble humans far advanced over those of our own world. Superboy, whose scientist father sent him hurtling into the far reaches of interstellar space in a tiny craft moments before great Krypton exploded into a billion billion fragments, speeding the spaceship unerringly on its course for planet Earth. Where, landing safely, the infant Superboy was found and adopted by a small-town couple, Jonathan and Martha Kent. And now, some years later, the child is young Clark Kent, a student at Smallville High School, where his meek, retiring manner hides an exciting secret known only to himself and his foster parents. The secret that Clark Kent is, in reality, Superboy, champion of the oppressed, enemy of all evildoers, dedicated to the cause of truth and justice.
Wow, for an opening that had quite a bit of exposition. That's exactly what it is. They explain everything in the opening, which actually I found refreshing. I don't know what the mysterious Superboy was at the beginning, but there it is. How does this compare to a comic book, you ask? We have all the right characters. Ma and Pa Kent are strangely untouched, and Lana Lang is actually in the pilot. No sign of Pete, but this is only a half-hour episode, and it really wasn't necessary. Strange things in the pilot. I never pictured Superboy as having a radio connection with the Smallville police that causes the Kent's lighting fixtures to blink. This television pilot seems to have that. Very strange. We do see sort of a bat cave built right into the Clark's home. Also a little bit strange. I wonder how they built this whole thing and established a relationship with the Smallville police without letting Clark's identity be known, but I'm willing to go with it. On a whole, I found the episode rather entertaining. Superboy here is played by John Rockwell, who, according to IMDb, didn't really go on to much. He had a couple guest spots on the Dobie Gills show and a couple other minor television roles. But he does a really great job. In fact, I think he looks a lot like George Reeves did, and I really liked his performance. Of course, you do have to take away from the fact that the students of Smallville High School are played by 30 to 35 year olds. I usually don't point this kind of thing out. 30 year olds in high school today in modern television shows is not that big of a deal, but it's cast better. These are really old students, and it is really noticeable. John Rockwell does, in fact, I think, exude a lot of the same qualities that George Reeves did. And this show could have worked as a show, I think. I did really enjoy it. You do have some stupid stuff with Superman crushing coal into diamonds, and of course, you had to have a moral to every half-hour sitcom, but this worked. I enjoyed this one. Now, on to the stranger of the two choices. I don't know who came up with what perhaps is the stupidest idea for a Superman spinoff ever. Adventures of Super Pup. Now, those of you unfamiliar, this was an all Little People production with little people wearing dog costumes and Superman gear. Bark Bent, aka Super Pup, defends Pamela Poodle and the rest of the staff at the Daily Bugle against Professor Sheepdip. I think Marvel might have a lawsuit there. I don't know. Can you sue for a 60-year-old pilot that never aired? Daily Bugle? Come on. Read a comic book. Super Pup, a.k.a. Bark Bent. I just like saying Bark Bent. Was played by Billy Curtis. Most famous for as King of the Munchkins or Leader of the Munchkins in The Wizard of Oz. I would like to say the performances in this were good, but the large, extremely large, in fact, dog heads that they make everybody wear causes them to bump into furniture, and because they're little people, somebody felt a need that all these characters needed to crawl up on furniture every chance they got. These two factors really factor out any talent that these actors had. I've seen Billy Curtis act in a bunch of stuff. Terror of Tiny Town, also an all little people production. I found him quite moving. I quite like that film. But that's not what this is about. It is quite frankly terrible. Only really interesting as a curiosity. Here's an example of some of the voice work. I won't call the acting anything else but that, because it wasn't fair to the actors.
Wake up! The chief's calling! Wake up! To get on the ball! What's up, chief?
Hurry up! I got a bomb in here! Hurry up! Hurry! Hurry up! Hurry.
A bomb? This looks like a job for Super Pup! Oh boy, this is great! Wow!
You know, I was really gearing up to dump on this little pilot for a while there, but I have to say, even listening to that clip, I smiled. The large dog heads are actually well animated, or not animated, articulated by puppeteers on the sidelines. I actually found them most effective, although way too large for any actor to get anything across. If you understand the sensibilities of the time, I'd actually recommend this. It is semi-offensive to use little people in this way, and it's an interesting time capsule. I think it, on some degrees, it works. Or maybe it's so bizarre, I've never seen anything else like this. As an oddity, I'd actually recommend seeking this out. Both pilots are available on the Superman Ultimate set. Well, before I get myself into any trouble, Chris, OUT.